定是 The land of the free Has anything changed at home Sweet libertyS
Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us tonight on Sweet Liberty. It is Wednesday, and it is the 28th of March in the year 2007. We had our first 60-degree day yesterday, and it was absolutely glorious.It's been a crazy winter weather around here, and I guess it has been for all of you folks. Our spiritual message this evening from A Course in Miracles from the workbook on page 64. You can indeed, listen to this, you can indeed afford to laugh at fear thoughts, remembering that Creator goes with you wherever you go. And that's the same thing that was attributed to Jesus' statement that I and my Father are one. He is in me as I am in you, and you are in me. And ladies and gentlemen, our guest this evening, I don't normally go into, and this is not a long bio, but a full bio on a guest that we bring on, but what we're going to be talking about tonight is so important. I brought the topic up before, but tonight you're going to have the pleasure and the privilege of actually hearing the expert on the subject of genetically modified food. Our guest this evening is Jeffrey Smith. He is a leading spokesperson on the health risks of genetically engineered food and the controversy surrounding their approval. He's also the author of the world's best-selling book on the subject, Seeds of Deception. Many of you have probably read the book, Exposing Industry and Government Lies about the safety of the genetically engineered foods you're eating. He's also the producer of a video titled Hidden Dangers in Kids' Meals and author of the internationally syndicated monthly column Spilling the Beans. And Mr. Smith is the director also of the Institute for Responsible Technology. He served on numerous boards, worked with several nonprofit and political groups on the genetic engineering issue for a decade. You ought to see the list on his website at seedsofdeception.com of all of the talks that Jeffrey Smith has given all over the world, folks. In 1988, he ran for U.S. Congress to raise public awareness of the health and environmental impacts of the GM crops. Later became vice president of marketing for a GMO detection lab. Now listen to this. Mr. Smith has a master's degree in business administration. He lives with his wife and family. In Iowa, surrounded by genetically modified corn and soybeans. They're all over the world. And I want to announce that his brand new book, Genetic Roulette, it was going to be available in April, and as of today, he has the books available. We're going to be talking about that tonight and anything else that he wants to share with you. Jeffrey, thank you once again so much for coming on with us this evening.
Thank you, Jackie. It's an auspicious day to be interviewed by you. After working for 2 years with input from more than 30 scientists to collect all the health risks of genetically engineered foods, we get to talk about it the day it arrives.
Well, and it's especially... I think it's wonderful. It's been at least 6-7 months that I have had in mind to give you a call and ask you to please come on, and wasn't it great that I got a hold of you today and you were available for this evening?
Yes.
And I appreciate it. Where do you want to start here?
Well,
Jeffrey?
I think for those people who may not know much about genetically engineered foods, I should probably give a little introduction
to what
they are.
That would be great.
And that is that genetically engineered foods are foods in which the genes of some species have been artificially implanted into the DNA. And it's typically done with a gene gun, where you blast millions of genes into millions of cells, hoping that some of those genes get into the DNA of those cells. And then you clone and grow the cells into plants, and then you have new plants, newly equipped with traits from new species. Now, this can get quite wild. I mean, they've actually genetically engineered a goat, I believe it was a goat, this week with 15% human genes.
No.
Yeah, they also put another goat that they put spider genes in to milk, trying to milk the goat for spiderweb protein to make bulletproof vests. They've put jellyfish genes into pigs to make their noses glow in the dark, and that's all experimental stuff. But if you eat corn chips, if you eat corn meal, if you eat high fructose corn syrup, then you're eating corn that's been genetically engineered to create its own pesticide in every cell and in every bite, unless it says non-GMO or organic. And so most of the corn in the United States is genetically engineered, most of that to produce its own pesticide. Most of the soy is genetically engineered not to die when sprayed with herbicide, as well as cottonseed and canola oil.
Roundup Ready.
Roundup Ready. That's the name of the crops that are ready to be sprayed with Roundup herbicide.
Yes. Yes. And I read not too long ago, but maybe long enough ago, that the percentage has increased drastically.
Oh, yeah, 89% of the soy.
Oh, 89. See, I heard 50%.
No, it's 89 now, 61% or 60% of the corn, 83% of the cotton, 75% of the canola. There's also most of the Hawaiian papaya and a little bit of zucchini and crookneck squash.
Oh, my. Cotton. What about cottonseed oil? I noticed that it's used a lot as an oil in, you know, frying like potato chips. And,
right.
Okay. Cottonseed oil. Cotton is not a vegetable.
No, but they do use cottonseed oil for food.
Yeah.
And they use cotton. Let's start there. That's a good place. Let's take a look at cotton. Now, the big story about cotton is coming out of India. Monsanto has bought up a seed company and is pushing their pesticide-laden cotton. This is cotton engineered with a gene from a soil bacterium called Bacillus thuringiensis, or BT. Now, BT is used by organic farmers in a natural form as a spray in times of high pest infestation. So it's a natural pesticide.
What is the name again?
BT. The soil bacterium is Bacillus thuringiensis.
Okay.
But everyone knows it as BT.
Okay.
And so when the regulatory agencies approved this BT gene in cotton and in corn, they said, no problem, it has a history of safe use, or that it's used by organic farmers. And it, in fact, although it'll rip apart the stomach of a pest that happens to eat it, that won't have any effect on mammals, because it doesn't even have receptors in the mammalian gut. So humans are completely safe. So this was their assumption that they didn't test. It turns out these assumptions are completely false. When people happened to be sprayed by BT spray, when they were doing gypsy moth spray in Washington State and Vancouver, hundreds of people complained of allergic type reactions. Some had to go to the hospital. When farm workers were tested who had been applying BT, they had an immune response in their blood to BT. When BT was fed to mice, they had an immune response as if they had been fed cholera toxin. They had abnormal and excessive cell growth in their digestive tract. So BT on its own is dangerous, but the BT gene that they put into the crops is even more dangerous. It's thousands of times more concentrated than the spray form, its molecular structure is more toxic, and it's created 24/7 in every cell of the cotton plant and the corn plant that's genetically engineered. So, what happened in India, this is an interesting story that's very current, that first of all, when you genetically engineer something, you have all sorts of unpredicted side effects, Jackie. You end up causing massive collateral damage in the natural DNA. The DNA could be like 4% or more different than what it was before the genetic engineering, all these mutations. And so the performance of the cotton was terrible and erratic, and thousands and thousands of farmers committed suicide who had planted BT in the promise that it would increase yields. They had taken out debts in order to plant it and to pay for the chemicals. They ended up losing their crop, losing their farm, and committing suicide.
Why losing their crop?
Well, what happened was there was very low yields in many cases. In the first years planted, according to one study, was 52% less yield than the non-BT. And sometimes the balls were very small. Sometimes there were no balls of cotton at all. Sometimes they just dropped to the ground. In some cases, farmers complained that the land was sterile after the cotton was planted. And so I've seen videotapes and read articles of, in one small region, there was a farmer committing suicide every 8 hours. It's just been
because
a disaster.
Because they were losing their farms. And
right, and then end up in huge debt that was building and building and building.
Tell us what was the ostensible purpose given to the farmers that they should do this?
Well, they were told that it would be higher yield. In fact, Monsanto Mahico would have posters of farmers claiming that they had huge yields. So one investigator actually tracked down the farmers who were pictured in the posters. One wasn't a farmer at all. He was a cigarette salesman.
Mm.
Another person just happened to have his picture taken, and he said, no way that, that I've gotten high yields from the BT cotton. Now, it's not just the yields that are a problem. When, after the cotton was harvested, these shepherds asked the farmers, can we use your fields to graze our sheep? And so they took over the grazing area to munch on the cotton plants. Well, an estimated 10,000 sheep died within a week of eating these BT plants, these plants that produce this pesticide in every bite. And it turns out it's not only sheep, but now we're also hearing about goats and cattle that are dying, apparently as a result of eating this BT cotton. Now, the way it happened was there happened to be a guy from a farmers union that was visiting a veterinarian in a government clinic. And as he typically does, he was flipping through the clinic records of autopsies to see if what the general problems were. And he found 11 cases that were listed of poisonings of sheep that were apparently because of eating, of grazing on BT cotton. And it even said cause of death in some cases appears to be the BT cotton. However, when it became very public, there was political intervention, and then someone came with a different pen and started to change the apparent cause of death, etc. But an investigating team looked at it and said it appears that there was a toxic reaction, and most likely that was the BT toxin created from the plants that are used to create the cottonseed oil that we eat.
Oh, geez. Oh, my God. Well, another thought that I had, and I'm going to ask an opinion. You don't have to even answer this if you don't want to. And I realize, unless you have some proof, but I don't think we do, that this is being done intentionally to destroy the farmers so that the huge, like Monsanto's and all of the large conglomerates will be in total control of the food production.
Well, their plans for the developing countries is clear in terms of their Terminator technology.
Let me explain what that is.
Yeah, Terminator seeds. You know about it. Let me share it with those
yeah.
that may not have heard about it. Right now, if you buy a genetically engineered seed, you sign a contract that you will not save seeds for the following year. Instead, if you want more seeds, you've got to go back and buy it from the source. You see, Monsanto's ideal future, according to their consultant Arthur Anderson years ago, was to genetically engineer 100% of all the commercial seeds in the world and patent them. And other companies have also tried to do it. So they bought up the seed supply of the earth. 39% of the seed supply is owned by these biotech companies. But it doesn't give them a penny if farmers save seeds year after year. So what they've done is they've created a technology with support from the USDA which causes crops to be sterile in the second year. And so what they want to do, and this is stated, they want to introduce this into the food supply, sell it throughout the developing countries where 1.4 billion farmers currently save seeds. By promoting these seeds, they will force the farmers to go back to the seed dealers year after year. Now, what it'll also do is be a disaster for food security, because before GM crops were introduced and the consolidation of seed dealers, Midwest farmers had 400 to 500 choices for their inputs for seeds. Now they have 4 or 5. So imagine what would happen when the world's biodiversity of food seeds becomes owned by these biotech companies. Instead of having hundreds of thousands of varieties cultured and worked in the soil to be worked perfectly in a particular geography, in a particular climate, you'll have these uniform genetics, very few choices, and you're going to bet the entire world's food supply on very few genetics, which is a stupid idea.
Oh, well.
for protecting the planet.
Right, except they don't really care about that, it appears, and I just don't think it's ignorance. They're doing it out of ignorance. Okay, there was another question I had about this cotton.
Yes.
If the cotton is used, the cotton balls is used to make cotton and make clothing from it, would that bacteria be in the cotton too?
Perfect question. What they found was hundreds of farm workers in India, including those who picked cotton, as well as leaned against cotton, loaded cotton on trucks, or worked in ginning factories, complained of allergic reactions.
There you go.
Now, a few minutes ago, we described the people that had been sprayed by BT spray in Washington State and in Vancouver. And if you look at the symptoms that they describe, they are identical to the symptoms described by the Indian cotton workers who leaned against, touched, or processed the BT cotton. So I assume that the BT cotton that's just been pulled from the crop certainly has the BT toxin in it that's reacting with these farm workers.
Yeah.
How long that stays in the cotton is anyone's guess. But consider this. The cotton is used for bandages. Now imagine that the BT causes certain sores not to heal. Now, the healing of sores is very important for diabetics. If they have a sore that's not healing, they typically, one of the reactions is for amputation.
Yes.
So my fear, of course, is that the BT might be exacerbating wounds that might otherwise heal, which could lead to amputation. Cotton is also used in feminine hygiene products. It's also used in baby's diapers. It's used in clothing. And so what we need to do desperately, and I'd love to raise some money to do this study, is to see how long the BT lasts through the stages of processing and how toxic it is during each of those stages, and then make that information available.
And I've always felt that, you know, I stay away from synthetic fibers as much as possible,
mm-hmm.
and that the safest thing is to use natural cotton and et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And now that's down the drain.
Well, you
at
better
least,
to use organic cotton when you have a choice.
But you know my concern about this? I don't know if this is true. I had read this in some report that they had actually changed the labeling requirements for organic, and if you buy a product that one product is organic, they can claim that it's organic.
So here's the deal on that. Here's the law.
Okay.
There are three types of labels for organic.
Okay.
One says made with 100% organic ingredients, and that's what it means. The second is certified organic, and that means 95% or more of the ingredients are organic, and the remaining 5% are not allowed to be genetically engineered. The third category is where it would say made with organic wheat, or made with organic sugar, or made with organic something.
Okay.
Now, when they say that, it means that 70% of the ingredients must be organic, at least, and that the remaining percentage must at least be non-genetically engineered. So that's the current law. Now, sometimes organic agriculture gets contaminated with genetically engineered drift, and there is no way to guarantee to prevent that. But we've just announced a very important campaign for healthier eating in America last month, or actually this month, which is going to help keep a purer seed supply, and in my opinion, it will probably create the tipping point to end the genetic engineering of the food supply in the United States.
Okay.
So here's what the plan looks like. We're jumping to the good news soon.
I like that. Thank you.
We'll get back to the bad stuff.
Thank you, Jeffrey. Thank
All right.
you.
We haven't even talked about changing your intestinal flora into living pesticide factories, but I'll get to that.
Okay.
Let's first let's first give you the good news. On March 9th, I gave a presentation with some colleagues at Expo West in Anaheim, which is the Natural Products Expo. And I announced that our Institute for Responsible Technology at responsibletechnology.org is launching a campaign for healthier eating in America, which is going to oversee the simultaneous transition of the natural and organic industry into a third-party verified non-GM status, and that we're going to educate health-conscious shoppers in all the health food stores using GMO education centers and also through the health food press, and then provide everyone with non-GMO shopping guides. And then ultimately, after the industry has had a chance to do the transition, maybe in 18 months or 2 years, we're going to institute in-store, on-shelf labeling of any products, and we think there'll be very few, that still contain GM foods in natural product stores. Now, we have, within that process of transferring everyone to non-GMO, the first thing is to establish a uniform definition of non-GMO that everyone can live with and a specific third-party verification. That's being handled by an organization called the Non-GMO Project. And when we made the announcement on March 9th, the Non-GMO Project received official endorsements from Whole Foods, from United Natural Foods, which is the big distributor in the health food industry, from Eden Foods, from Nature's Path, from Lundberg Family Farms, from Strauss Family Creamery. So basically what we have is an acceptance of a plan to clean out GMOs from natural and keep them out of organic. Now, what's going to happen is there's already 28 million people in the United States that buy organic on a regular basis. There are 28 million.
That's wonderful.
And there's 54 million that buy them on an irregular basis. Now, these people don't tend to avoid eating genetically engineered foods when they're buying non-organic products. They don't know how, but they of course would prefer non-GM. And so by giving them more information about why GM crops are bad and how to avoid them, we're going to see tens of millions of people shifting their brand choices based on GM content. What do you think Kraft, Nestle's, and McDonald's are going to do when they see 5% of U.S. consumers starting to change brands based on GMO content? Yes. They're going to drop GMOs, just like they did in Europe in April of 1999 in a single week. When enough consumers in Europe hit the tipping point, Unilever committed to remove GM ingredients, and within a week, nearly every major food company followed suit. So, can we believe
that they actually have, even if they claim that they have?
Absolutely, because now we have the non-GMO project with the third-party verification, which requires documentation, sampling plans, and testing.
The sampling. Oh,
yes.
That's wonderful.
So it turns out it's a very good news. It's news we've all been waiting for, and it's something that my institute is happy to put out there as one of the campaigns that we're doing. Now, if people listening want to get involved in a campaign, another campaign that everyone can get involved with is GM-Free Schools. And what we have is a video called Hidden Dangers in Kids' Meals. You can go at seedsofdeception.com and take a look at excerpts.
I'd like to repeat that, folks. It's seedsofdeception.com.
So at seedsofdeception.com, you can watch this excerpts of this video. And we find that when we show it to a community, it's like instant activism. You just play DVD and stir. You just all of a sudden, a significant percentage of the audience always says, I want to be involved in a GM-free school campaign. And so we have a 60-page manual, a media kit. You get your own website, your own listserv, your own strategy, support people, and you can create community awareness about the health risks of genetically engineered foods and why kids are most at risk from these health dangers of GMOs.
Sounds like a mammoth project that you all are undertaking, and God bless you, Jeffrey.
Thank you. Thank you.
I mean that from the bottom of my heart. The dangers of GM food, you're saying that they are using it and serving it in the schools.
Yes, they are.
I can't think of any other reason why everybody listening to this broadcast would not undertake to begin home gardening with non-hybrid seeds, because I understand that with a hybrid seed, only about 25% of them will germinate?
Well, actually, it's not necessarily the case.
No.
Hybrid seeds, I mean, I'm not an expert at hybrid seeds. They're not
necessarily
genetically engineered.
I was told this at Rohrer Seed Company.
Well, what happens is if you try to replant hybrid seeds, you get all sorts of non-uniform things, etc. See, it depends. It really depends on the species, but it's sort of not my area.
Yeah.
But hybrid seeds are the main seeds used for corn, for example.
Yes.
Around the country. Now, what I'd like to do is, because this is the day that my book, I'm sitting here with the book in my lap.
Thank you.
And I want to just share with you, because I'm kind of proud of this thing that I was working on 7 days a week, 5 nights a week, for more than a year, approximately 2 years. And except for when I was traveling, I was working on the book constantly. And I just want to share what it is, because it's rather timely today.
Genetic roulette.
Yes.
Okay.
And the subhead is called The Documented Health Risks of Genetically Engineered Foods. Now, what we've been talking about are just like two or three of the risks I talked about. The sheep
Before
death.
You go there, could I ask you one more question?
Sure.
Rice.
Okay.
Because I saw an article by this Dr. Marcola.
Right.
Where he actually seemed to be endorsing this genetically modified rice.
No, he's not a favor of GMOs. I wrote a chapter with him for his next book.
Okay.
And, he's very much against GM rice. So here's the situation about rice. In 2001 was the last time this company, Bayer Crop Science, which I think was Aventis at the time, had field trialed, meaning they planted outside in an experimental field, rice that was genetically engineered not to die when sprayed with a particular herbicide.
Okay.
Now, for other reasons, I should let you know that when you eat this rice, it's possible that it can reconvert and create the herbicide inside your gut, but that's another story. Now, it turns out in August, middle of August of 2006, the head of the USDA announced that, oops, this rice had contaminated U.S. long grain rice. And within 2 days, rice futures had dropped by $150 million because Japan all of a sudden said, we're not going to take this illegal, unapproved rice. Europe said soon after, we're not going to take this unapproved, illegal rice. And so all of a sudden the rice industry, not even having any commercialized genetically engineered rice, just from an experimental variety that had been grown, was now faced with a contamination crisis. It wasn't in high quantities. It was in very low percentages. But even a low percentage was considered illegal in countries that pay attention to these things, as opposed to the United States, where the regulatory agencies are told to promote the biotechnology industry and avoid labeling and avoid testing requirements and avoid any problems. So in other countries, their concerns has forced huge losses, 25 lawsuits filed against Bayer Crop Science for contaminating the rice supply and causing hundreds of millions of dollars of damage.
Okay, so where does that leave us right now if we're buying rice? Do we know if we're getting any of the contaminated or...
No, generally not. I mean, if you buy organic, like my friends over at Lundberg Family Farms, they do testing now. They're part of a system to make sure their rice is free from GMOs. California-grown rice is pretty free from GMOs because they didn't have this growing there. But it's possible that if you just simply buy long grain rice in the United States, that a tiny percentage of it will contain GM.
Okay. And Lundberg Family Farms, do they have a website, and can people actually order from them?
I'm sure you can. They do have a website, and they're sold in health food stores all over the country.
Okay. All right. We're 1 minute away from having our break, our 3 minute break. And
okay.
So when we come back from that, then you're going to begin sharing some of what's in the book, Genetic Roulette, which
I'll
is
even
available.
Read you the first few paragraphs.
Wonderful.
That'll be
great. And how our listeners can get the book. Now, you have the other one, Seeds of Deception.
Right.
Are you going to have any type of if somebody wanted to buy both of them, do you have any thing worked out?
Well, I have a thing where people like to buy a lot of these in order to give away to friends.
Cool.
So I have a program where it's discounted if you buy six or more Seeds
All
of
right.
Deception or All bad
right.
case deals.
We'll talk about that on the other side of this break. Folks, stay with us. with Jeffrey Smith, our guest. And I have to say once again, thank you, Jeffrey. I'm just so glad I can't be today. We'll be right back, folks.
Sometimes our .com server goes down, so don't forget, we have a backup, FirstAmendmentRadio.net.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mined supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188. If you'd like to get a copy of this program, there are a few ways that we can help you. You may subscribe at FirstAmendmentRadio.com for only $45 a month, and you'll receive an MP3 CD weekly of all of our programs. As a bonus, we'll send you a password for our audio archives online. That's a $15 value. Or you may request any month of any program on one MP3 CD for a minimum donation of only $25, or any single program on tape, MP3 CD, or CD for only $15. You may do all of this online at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Just follow the instructions to make a donation or subscribe. You may also adopt an hour of your favorite program. Please don't forget that most of the programs on FirstAmendmentRadio.com are listener-supported. Don't do Internet? Then call 559-781-3773 and we'll be honored to help you. Thank you from all of us here at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
If you read the history books, the most often asked questions of Southerners was this: why did you fight? And the most often given answer is, because you're here. In other words, the South did not invade the North invaded the South.
Was it the Civil War or War of Federal Aggression? John Weaver sets the record straight in this DVD series on the Civil War from the Old Paths Christian History Conference. Was there a war to set the slaves free? Or was it a war to enslave us all? Get this DVD and judge for yourself. War of Federal Aggression. Get this DVD presentation for a donation of $25 from FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Order online today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Call 559-781-3773. The truth seems strange only because we've been indoctrinated with a fiction. War of Federal Aggression. Get it today.
All right, we're back. Jeffrey Smith is our guest, and I want to give you once again the website, seedsofdeception.com. It's the name of his existing book, and Jeffrey, if I didn't read this wrong, that book is available in about 9 or 10 other countries?
In 10 languages in
10
more countries,
languages,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been very, very impactful, actually. I've been very happy with what basically what Seeds of Deception is a series of stories of incredible industry manipulation, political collusion, documented attempts to bribe government officials, scientists who were fired from their jobs, stripped of responsibilities, forced out, gagged. There's Muscling the Media chapter talks about how Fox TV news series was canceled by a threat from Monsanto's attorney, and how people like in the New York Times reporters were taken off of the beat because of threats by Monsanto's PR people. All sorts of ways in which the biotech industry has forced their dangerous agenda. And woven through these stories is the science behind the genetically engineered crops and the enormous risk of eating the foods. And so what it does is it explains why the foods are dangerous, how they got on the market, and an antidote to any further attempts by the biotech industry or their enforcement wing, the United States government, in trying to convince you that these foods are safe and appropriate. So that's been very successful. It came out in 2003, and it literally has changed the debate on GMOs around the world, because before that, most people handled the health issues in two sentences simply by saying that there's not enough studies, and so we're being used as guinea pigs. But that talks in detail about some of the health issues related to GMOs. But then the next book, I decided to go even further into the health side and translate all the known scientific risks, all the known adverse effects, into easy-to-read two-page spreads. And so there's 65 two-page spreads with an executive summary on the left for the quick scanning reader and detailed cited text on the right for those who want more details. And then after describing the 65 risks, I show how government assessments and regulations are not competent to even identify most of those dangers, let alone protect us from that. And then I show in the next section how industry research is specifically carefully rigged to avoid finding those problems. And finally, I show that GM foods are not needed to save the world. In fact, they work against trying to feed the world.
Yeah.
So this is my new book, Genetic Roulette, which is sitting in my lap for the first time today.
Good. And you're going to read a few of the paragraphs?
Yes, I'll read you the first two opening paragraphs, and then I'll share with you some of the 65
Great.
Risks.
Do you want to tell our listeners how they can get the book?
Sure.
Please.
You can go to geneticroulette.com, which is a subset of the seedsofdeception.com site. So geneticroulette.com, and you can also call toll-free 888-717-7000 or at geneticroulette.com.
And the price of the book?
$27.95. It's a hardcover.
And it's priceless. I can imagine priceless.
It's a biggie.
Uh-huh.
It's 2.5 pounds. I've never written a book like this before. Okay, so this is the introduction. It's called Deceptions, Assumptions, and Denial, Exposing the Roots of Genetically Modified Crops. When Kirk Azevedo accepted a Monsanto company recruiter's offer in 1996 to sell genetically modified GM crops, it wasn't the pay increase that inspired him. It was the writings of Monsanto CEO Robert Shapiro that were his motivation. Shapiro painted a picture of feeding the world and cleaning up the environment with his company's new technology. Kirk was fascinated by the idea of swapping genes between species, creating designer organisms that could reduce manufacturing waste, turning fields into factories, and producing anything from life-saving drugs to insect-resistant plants. When he visited Monsanto's St. Louis headquarters for his new employee training, Azevedo shared his enthusiasm for Shapiro's vision during a meeting. When the session ended, a company vice president pulled him aside and set him straight. "Wait a second," he told his Azevedo. "What Robert Shapiro says is one thing, but what we do is something else. We are here to make money. He is the front man who tells a story. We don't even understand what he's saying." So that's the opening.
Was the vice president?
That was the vice president telling Kirk Azevedo that everything that he had heard from Robert Shapiro was just basically front garbage and had nothing to do with the real goal of the corporation, which was to make money.
Wow.
And then later, I'll just tell you, Kirk Azevedo told me this. He said they were planting genetically modified cotton and a test trial in California near his house. And one of the researchers told him that there was a protein that was inside the crop that had never appeared in cotton before. It was not the intended BT protein. It was somehow a new protein that was created as a result of all the collateral damage that occurs when you genetically engineer a plant. And Kirk was concerned that this new protein might be a problem for animal consumption or human consumption of animals that ate the cotton plants. And he found out that they were feeding these cotton plants to these dairy cows right up this road from Kirk's house.
Jesus.
And he said to the PhD in charge of the plant, he said, "You shouldn't be feeding the products of this field trial into the food supply. We should first characterize the protein to see if it's a problem." And the guy said, "We've always fed the results of these field trials into the food supply, and we're going to continue to do that here." So he was really concerned, and he went to every member of his team and he was like this, he was in charge of selling this cotton into the Western region, and no one paid attention to him. In fact, he said that they just ostracized him when they realized that he was working against the concept of just making money. So then he went to the ag commissioners in California, he went to the university professors in California. I said, did you consider yourself a whistleblower? He said, I tried to, but no one listened. And so he finally blew the whistle to me last year. You know, this was 10 years after the incident.
So he's finally being heard.
And I publicized it.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, so getting back to the book, I wanted to share some of the basic structure, because if I describe the structure, then you, all of a sudden you get a big snapshot of what the risks are. The subhead of the book is called The Documented Health Risks of Genetically Engineered Foods, and it has nearly everything that's known about the risks of GM foods. So the first part, as I said, is 65 health risks, and it's divided into 8 sections. The first section is evidence of reactions in animals and humans, and there's 20 of them. And it talks about, there's thousands of sick, sterile, or dead animals, thousands of humans with toxic or allergic reactions linked to GM crops or products. There's people that have talked about toxic or allergic reactions from breathing in the pollen from corn producing BT toxin. There's 5 to 10,000 people that fell sick with a deadly epidemic. About 100 people died from a genetically engineered food supplement called L-tryptophan in the 1980s. In one case, Russian Academy of Science, a top scientist there, found that the offspring of mother rats that were fed genetically engineered soy died at a rate of 56% within 3 weeks, but the offspring of rats that were fed natural soy died at only about 9%. They found that the same genetically engineered soy in mice caused changes in sperm cells, changes in embryo, young embryos. There was apparently toxic reactions in the liver, changed enzymes in the pancreas, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Potentially precancerous cell growth, smaller brains, livers, and testicles, bleeding stomachs, et cetera. Anyway, that's evidence of reactions in animals.
You're going real fast here. I hope they're grabbing it.
Well, the concept is, you see, I'm going fast because it gives you an idea. The details are all there in the book.
Right.
You can even go online and take a look at a couple of samples of 2-page spreads. But there's overwhelming evidence now that the genetically engineered foods are dangerous and cause reactions.
And something that I had read, this was a report on potatoes that they had fed to rats where the stomach lining thickened.
Right,
the immune system was depressed.
Exactly.
I think their arteries narrowed.
Their arteries didn't narrow. But you're right on the other ones.
They
had smaller brains, livers, and testicles.
Okay, now that I don't recall reading, but I do recall reading that when they took them off it and put them on healthy, natural food, they couldn't reverse the damage that was done.
Well, they didn't have a reversal trial in that particular potato thing. They did have reversals in the soy diet for mice. So this is the first, what you're describing is the very first story or the very first chapter of my book in Seeds of Deception. And what happened was the UK government wanted to create long-term feeding studies as the requirement for the safety evaluations of GM foods. In the United States, the FDA scientists had asked for that. They said these foods could create toxins, allergies, new diseases, and nutritional problems. But the person in charge of policy at the FDA was Monsanto's former attorney and later Monsanto's vice president, who said, I'm sorry, no testing necessary. We're just going to consider these foods the same as other foods. So there's no required testing for health, according to the FDA in the United States. But the UK, a couple of years later, said, we're going to have some testing. And so they awarded a grant to Dr. Arpad Pusztai, the world's leading expert in his field, worked at the top nutrition research laboratory at the UK. And he created, with his 20-member research team, potatoes genetically engineered to produce an insecticide. And he fed those potatoes to rats. He also fed another set of rats natural potatoes that were spiked with the insecticide.
What do you mean spiked?
Meaning that they mixed the insecticide.
Oh, the insecticide that the other potato could produce.
Exactly.
Okay.
And then they fed another group just potatoes, and everyone had a complete and balanced diet as well. Now, it turned out only those rats that ate the genetically engineered potatoes developed these horrible symptoms in virtually every system tested within 10 days. And the rats that ate the potato that had the insecticide added did not have those problems. And so it wasn't the insecticide that was causing the problems. It was somehow generically the process of creating the genetically engineered potato that caused potentially precancerous cell growth in the digestive tract, smaller organs, immune system damage, etc. Now, he was invited to speak on television by a UK radio, a UK TV show, and with permission from his director, he went on the show, was interviewed, and it was cut to about 2.5 minutes. And after the show, he was a hero at his institute. The press were calling from all over Europe. There was a top scientist in the world who was concerned about the health risks of GMOs. And then two phone calls were allegedly placed from the UK Prime Minister's office, forwarded through the receptionist to the director of the institute. The next morning, the scientist was fired from his job after 35 years, silenced with threats of a lawsuit. The 20-member research team was disbanded. They never instituted the long-term safety testing protocol. In fact, the Institute put out a series of press statements designed to trash the scientist's reputation and his studies in order to support the reputation of genetically engineered foods. Now, he was eventually, by an order of Parliament, the gag order was released so he could speak before Parliament. He got his data back, and it's now published in The Lancet, and it's the most in-depth animal feeding study ever conducted on genetically engineered foods. And it shows that the process generically is very dangerous. Now, I asked Dr. Pustai, I said, what was the most shocking moment? I figured it was the time he was fired or the discovery of the damage to the rats. It turns out it was months earlier when he was still a pro-GMO scientist in good standing. He had the opportunity to read the confidential submissions that the biotech companies used to get their GM crops approved in the UK. Now remember, he was working on creating what was supposed to be the testing protocol that would allow crops to be approved, and so he was one of the most competent people on earth to look at these tests that the companies had done on their own crops. He said to me, that was a turning point in his life. It was so shocking. He said, it was such terrible research, such poor, flimsy, superficial, bad science. He said, I realized what they were doing and what I was doing was diametrically opposed. I was doing safety studies. They were doing as little as possible to get their foods on the market as quickly as possible. And he realized that if his potatoes that had caused all this damage to the rats, if they had been submitted to the same stupid research, they would have made it to the market. But what was more worrisome was that the soy and corn that had gotten on the market was produced from the same process that he used to create his potatoes. And remember, it was the process that caused all that damage, not the specific nature of the genetic engineering, and that those soy and corn had never been subjected, and still have not been subjected, to tests that looked for this potentially precancerous cell growth, the size of the organs, and the damage to the immune system, and the damage to the liver, etc. So they may be creating those same kind of results in us day after day.
Exactly, exactly. The fact that the GM corn can actually drift and wind up pollinating other corn.
Oh, yeah.
Does the farmer who's growing non-GM corn, do they have any signs that their corn has been pollinated, or do they think that their corn is still okay?
Yeah, you have to test it, and it gets expensive, and it's a hassle.
Okay.
To test it, and you can't just look and see.
Okay.
And popcorn doesn't get cross-pollinated from other corn, but most of the other corns do.
Yeah.
And so, for example, in Mexico is the source of the diversity of the genetic species of corn. They have like 52 different types of land races of corn. And so they have banned the planting of genetically modified corn to protect their species. But because of the North American Free Trade Agreement and the subsidies of U.S. corn, we've increased our exports now of corn into Mexico, wiping out hundreds of thousands of farmers. And now they planted the seeds from the corn that they imported from the U.S., and it's drifted and it has cross-pollinated with the indigenous corn varieties. This was discovered by a UC Berkeley professor when he told a senior government official about it in Mexico. The government official is a very pro-biotech guy. He probably had a lot of money he could make from GMOs. And at any point, he said that the professor said to me that this senior government official threatened him and implied, "We know where your children go to school," trying to get him not to publish evidence of contamination.
And what did you say the percentage of GM corn is in the world today?
In the world, I don't know. In the United States, it's
61%. 61%. So, in other words, I love Mexican food and I buy corn tortillas.
So, white corn is, there's no officially commercialized white corn. So, if you get white corn tortillas, then there might be some small amount of contamination, but it would only be a small amount.
Uh-huh.
If you get yellow corn, and if it doesn't say non-GMO,
uh-huh.
and it doesn't say organic, then it is likely to contain significant percentages of genetically engineered corn. Now, now I'm going to mention one of the scariest potential risks of genetically engineered foods, because it's about corn tortillas. You can hold your ears. So what happens is when you genetically engineer something, you put genes in and you change those genes and you put them in typically from bacteria, and for a number of technical reasons, they end up optimized for transferring out of the food that you eat into the DNA of your gut bacteria.
Oh, my God.
Now, they've only tested for this once. It's the only human feeding experiment ever published on genetically engineered foods. Only one has been published. Only one has been done and published. And they found that from soybeans, sections of the gene that was inserted into the soybean transferred into the DNA of human gut bacteria and was there on a stable basis, probably continuing to produce this Roundup-ready protein inside someone's gut. Now, that means that if you eat corn tortillas, let's say the gene that produces the BT toxin transfers to your gut bacteria. It could turn it potentially, this is all theoretical because no one has done a study on it, remarkably, it could potentially turn your intestinal flora into living pesticide factories which might continue to produce this toxic BT inside your gut long after you stop eating genetically engineered corn. Now, I don't know how often it happens, if it happens, or how to fix it. But there's every indication that it does happen because the only time they've ever looked for gene transfer in human gut bacteria, they found it, and that there are many reasons why plant DNA doesn't normally transfer, but bacterial DNA that's genetically engineered probably does. So I hope that people take that to heart and decide to conscientiously avoid eating GMOs. And how do you do that? You either buy organic, you buy products that say non-GM, or you read the labels and you avoid the four major GM crops: soy, corn, cotton, and canola. Now with the oils, like all of them make vegetable oil, you won't end up with gene transfer because of oil, because by the time it's made into oil, the genes have been removed. There's no DNA in the oil. Very little in the cold press. But there still are chances that it has some toxic elements as a result of this massive collateral damage in the DNA that occurs as a result of creating the genetically engineered crop. So we would want to read. Now, if you go on to seedsofdeception.com, you get much more detailed information. You can look at an online shopping guide. You can find out how to avoid GMOs in restaurants. And we're going to be putting out a non-GMO shopping guide in paper form around the country in all the health food stores probably by the end of this year.
Thank God for the work that you're doing.
You're welcome. You're still recovering from this.
I'm not recovered. No, I'm not. I'm not even recovering. I've so often thought about just buying corn, you know, like from the health food store, the corn meal.
Yes.
And just making my own corn tortillas.
Yes.
I mean, that would be the thing to do right there.
Well, that's one way to do it. Absolutely. Now, unfortunately,
but you're saying, though, that if it says white corn.
White corn is not, there's no genetically engineered commercialized varieties of white corn, although there may be some small amounts of contamination from yellow corn in the white corn.
Well, what else would an individual do if you didn't make your own?
Yeah, it's true. Popcorn's okay, by the way. There's no GM popcorn.
None.
Yeah.
Not even, what's his name, the big guy with
not even Rickenbacker, not Jiffy Pop, nothing.
Okay.
Now, let's say you're going to buy tomato sauce and you want to buy, let's say you buy Ragu tomato sauce. It's not organic, it's just available in your local store. If you pick up the Ragu spaghetti sauce that says Ragu Chunky and you look at it, it has soybean oil and high fructose corn syrup.
Yeah.
So if you pick up the Ragu Light, it has olive oil and no corn syrup.
Oh, wow.
So the Ragu Light is not genetically engineered. Mm-hmm. The Ragu Chunky is. And so what happens is, as you learn to avoid these ingredients, which are listed on my website at seedsofdeception.com, you can learn which brands are okay to bring home. It's a little harder when you're eating out.
That's a good thing to do, because I found a website that was listing all of the foods that had the high fructose corn syrup in it. And somebody wrote in and said, wouldn't it be easier to just tell us what foods don't have it? Because when I found out about it, I remember, well, my grandchildren were coming. I was going to get some hamburger buns. They don't like the whole grain from the health food store. And I thought, all right, a little bit isn't going to... I stood there for probably an hour reading every single label and could not find anything that didn't have high fructose corn syrup.
Right, and if it has high fructose corn syrup and it's made in the United States, it's genetically engineered. So it's a double whammy. Now, there's another genetically engineered... product. There's a couple of them I'm just going to mention while we have a couple of minutes. Aspartame is a genetically engineered food sweetener. It's a food additive. It's I have a section of that at the end of my book in the appendix. Many people consider it to be the most dangerous additive in the American in the human diet. There's a lot of information you can get if you go online. You can spend hours reading about thousands and thousands of health complaints linked to aspartame
and death. And death,
yes, it's true.
Yes.
And there's also bovine growth hormone,
which
is a genetically engineered drug injected into cows to increase milk supply.
And kills the cows very quickly.
Well, it certainly causes a lot of health issues. There's about 21 different health problems listed on Monsanto's own label. There's a lot that isn't even on the label. And it's been associated with two things, at least. One is a high rate of twins. So they believe that the higher rate of twins in the United States compared to the UK by 16% or something
is because of the BPH.
And it's because of the EBGH. And the other thing is the increased level of IGF-1 hormone in the milk will likely increase the level of free IGF-1 hormone in your blood supply, and high levels of IGF hormone in you are linked to cancer. So there's a huge amount of research there supporting this link between IGF-1 and cancer and milk treated with RBGH and very high levels of
IGF-1. And how would it isn't listed on the labels?
No, in some cases it is. Now, we've actually hit the tipping point in the United States, so that there's so much consumer concern about it that dairies have been lining up, falling over themselves since the beginning of last year to get rid of RBGH and to label it on the milk
Wonderful.
As hormone-free.
Wonderful.
So it is very good news, and we hope to have the same kind of tipping point reached about GMOs in the United States.
And you're very good news. We're out of our hour.
Yeah.
Folks, the book is geneticroulette.com, and Jeffrey, maybe you'll come back again sometime.
Well, thank you
very
much.
Because I know there's lots more. But
there's lots more.
Thank you so much. God bless you.
Thank you.
Folks, we'll be back next Wednesday. And bless you all. Good night. Good night, Jeffrey.
Good night.
Who are you? That is the question, and the name of the program. To learn what the question means and what the answers are, tune in every Sunday afternoon, and Rice McLeod will give you the